Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, chapter 4. Vidura approaches Maitreya, text 10. Tasya
anuraktasya
munehe mukundaha pramoda bhava anatta kandarasya ashrinvataha maam anuragahasa Samikshaya Vishramayam Vacha Tasyan Raktasya Mune Mukunda Pramoda Bhava Natakandarasya Ashinvato Mam Anuragahasa Samikshaya Vishramayam Vivacha Tasya Anuraktasya Mune Mukunda Pramoda Bhava Natakandarasya Ashinvato Mam Anuragahasa Samikshaya Vishramayam Uvacha Tasya Anuraktasya Munir Mukunda Pramoda Bhava Natakandarasya Ashinvato Mam Anuragahasa Samikshaya Vishramayam Uvacha Tasya He is Maitreya's Anuraktasya Although attached Mune
of the sage
Mukunda
the Lord who awards salvation
Pramoda Bhava in a pleasing manner. Excuse me, in a pleasing attitude. Anatta
Lord.
Kandarasya
of the shoulder.
Ashrinvataha
while thus hearing.
Mam
unto me.
Anuragahasa
with kind smiling
Samikshaya
particularly seeing me
Vishramayam
allowing me complete rest
Vacha
said
Translation Maitreya Muni was greatly attached to him, the Lord, and he was listening in a pleasing attitude, with his shoulder lowered, with a smile and a particular glance upon me, having allowed me to rest, the Lord spoke as follows. Purport by His Divine Grace is Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Although both Uddhava and Maitreya were great souls, the Lord's attention was more on Uddhava because he was a spotlessly pure devotee. A Jnana Bhakta, or one whose devotion is mixed with the monistic viewpoint, is not a pure devotee. Although Maitreya was a devotee, his devotion was mixed. The Lord reciprocates with his devotees on the basis of transcendental love and not on the basis of philosophical knowledge or fruitive activities. In the transcendental loving service of the Lord, There is no place for monistic knowledge or fruitive activities. The gopis in Vrindavan were neither highly learned scholars nor mystic yogis. They had spontaneous love for the Lord, and thus he became their heart and soul, and the gopis also became the heart and soul of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya proved the relationship of the gopis with the Lord as supreme. Herein, the Lord's attitude towards Uddhava was more intimate than with Maitreya Muni. Tasyam rakasya munir mukunda pramoda bhavanata kandarasya ashunvato mam anuragahasa samikshaya vishwamayam vacha. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, comes to this world, the material world, for several purposes. Yada yada hi dharmasya glani bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya siddhatmanam shijanam. Whenever there is a decline in religious practice and a predominant rise of irreligion, the Lord comes to reestablish principles of religion. And that was the case on the occasion 5,000 years ago when Krishna appeared. The earth had become overburdened with demoniac kings, and the increase of irreligious principles was becoming prominent. So the Lord came. Not only that, but the age of Kali was about to begin. In fact, it is said that the age of Kali began the day Krishna disappeared, the very day. That's the day Kali Yuga begins. So the Lord knew that Kali Yuga was about to begin, and he wanted to give good instruction for the people in the age of Kali. Krishna there's a verse that explains that the Srimad Bhagavatam is just like the sun, and it has arisen after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. Persons who have lost their vision due to the darkness of the age of Kali shall get light from this Purana. What is this Purana? Purana ko dinoditaha. This Bhagavatam gives light or enlightenment in the age of Kali. And therefore, Krishna's pastimes are depicted in Srimad Bhagavatam. And Bhagavad Gita was spoken by the Lord directly for the benefit of Arjuna and the benefit of others in this age. And all ages, Bhagavad Gita is the eternal science of self-realization. Well, now, Krishna has used up his 125 years. That's what he allotted for this visit to Earth. It's not such a long time. Previous ages, in the Dwapara Yuga that he appeared in, the average age, or shall we say the lifespan, was 1,000 years. That was in the beginning of the age. But this is now at the end of the age. So it was down to about 125. Krishna lived. That doesn't mean that Krishna was controlled by the lifespan expectancy, life expectancy statistics, or even by the age of Dwapara. He was not controlled. But he, apparently, when the Lord comes, he acts to some extent like an ordinary person. Not completely, because some of his activities are extraordinary and no one else can perform them. But some of the activities, they look like ordinary activities. Still, they're wonderful. It's like Krishna, as a child, he would pull the tails of the calves, and when their tails were pulled, they became frightened and they began running. And he would hold on to their tails and they would drag him through the muddy fields. And so this is not so extraordinary. Other children might be able to do something like this also. But when the Lord does it, it's wonderful. Another thing he did was he was stealing butter from the butter pots of the gopis, the ladies, cowherd women. Well, that's also not exclusive. It's not that only the personality of Godhead could steal butter. Others could steal butter. But when he does it, it becomes really a wonderful pastime. You might say, why is that? That sounds like you're just making some mythology, some story, so that everything Krishna does is worshipable. Even if it's ordinary, just stealing butter, why should that be such an extraordinary event? Yes, that's the point. But when Krishna steals butter, everyone becomes happy. Even those whose butter is stolen become joyful. That's one difference. Normally in the material world, if someone's butter was stolen, they wouldn't become happy. They would be very upset. They might go to court or make some objection. But when Krishna steals butter, everyone becomes happy. The other thing is that being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his activities are by nature all attractive. Krishna means all attractive. And we see that his stealing butter has become such a famous thing. Damodar pastimes. His mother, she bound him to a grinding mortar. Of course, that was not such an easy thing. Ordinarily, if there was a child, a very small child, crawling even, not even, well, able to run a little bit. It's old enough to run, but so when there's an ordinary child, and if the mother is displeased, she can take rope and tie the child to a grinding mortar. That's quite easy. But Krishna displayed his aspect being the Supreme and consequently she could not tie him around the waist. She gathered up rope from the house. She tried to bind him, but the rope was too short by 2 inches. Then she got more rope, tied it together, and tried to bind him, and still the rope was short by 2 inches. And in this way, she was frustrated. No matter how much rope she acquired, it was always too short. Now, how's that? That is because Krishna was displaying some of his opulences. He cannot be bound up by anyone. He's Svarat. He's independent. That was one part. You could say that he stole butter. That's ordinary. But the fact that he couldn't be bound up, that's not ordinary. You might say, well, that might have been some exaggeration. Okay. But then, once he was bound up, he agreed. He had the grinding mortar tied to his waist. Now, the idea was that he was a naughty boy. He was stealing butter. So by tying him to the grinding mortar, it was so big and heavy, he wouldn't be able to move. He would just have to stay there, just like if you tie a dog to a tree. What can the dog do? He has to stay there. Or a horse. Formerly, when they used horses, they would tie them up to a tree or some kind of hitching post. So, the idea was tie him up and he won't run around. If he's tied up, he won't go anywhere. But the child, he pulled the grinding mortar and it lodged between 2 trees. As he went between the two, they were not small trees, they were very large trees. Arjuna, they were called Arjuna trees. And the grinding mortar lodged between the two, and Krishna, as a child, kept crawling, and the grinding mortar means for grinding spices. It was about this high, quite strong. It weighed a lot. And as Krishna kept crawling, the mortar pulled down the 2 trees, and they came crashing down. So that's extraordinary. Ordinary child could not do that. Even from a physics point of view, if you're going to pull down 2 trees, you would not try to pull them down from the root, from the base. Right? Physics. Much more difficult. If you're going to pull them down, you could try pulling them down from the top. It'd be a lot easier. Here he was, just a little child, crawling, so that means the grinding mortar was on the ground. So, can you imagine, big trees, 2 of them, not just 1, but 2, pulled down both of them at the same time, simultaneously, and the grinding mortar was on the ground, being pulled by a little child, just a few inches apart, crawling. So it doesn't make any sense that this is possible. An ordinary child couldn't do it. Still, someone may say, well, it may be exaggeration. Maybe there was a wind also simultaneously at the same, a hurricane came at the same time and accidentally, because hurricanes can knock down trees. You see that. They're known for knocking down many trees. So you could say maybe there was a hurricane. But another feature of this pastime was that as soon as the 2 trees fell down, 2 shining personalities came out. One came out of one tree, one came out of the other. And the That's already extraordinary, that the trees would be pulled down and two shining personalities would come out, well dressed. And then they begin to offer prayers to this little child, Krishna. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we can see that Krishna's activities, although they might seem ordinary, like stealing butter, but they're mixed with activities that no one else can perform. So it's not just the stealing butter that's so attractive, it's the other aspects too. The knocking down the trees, the two demigod sons came out and offered prayers to Krishna, you're the Supreme. Anyway, Krishna now has performed his activities 125 years and he's preparing to leave. And he's sitting, leaning up against a young banyan tree. And now, by his causeless mercy, these two personalities have come, Uddhava and Maitreya. And they are going to get they're the most fortunate living beings in the world because they got to see the Lord just before he left and they got instructions. They got his final instructions before he departed. And this will be a great benediction. It's like if a very powerful or important person leaves, if he passes away, and his last will and testament is very important. It's his final. He may have had different ideas before in his life. He might say, well, I'm going to leave all my wealth to these sons. But at the end, he can change everything. Sometimes they do that. Sometimes a parent will remove one member of the family from the will at the last stage. Or whatever. So in this case, Krishna, he's giving his final will and testament. And the two recipients of this are Uddhava and Maitreya. Uddhava is a childhood friend of Krishna. He's from Vrindavan. Although he's said to be a student of Brihaspati. He's a scholar as well. But very dear friend of Krishna's. In fact, he's so dear, he's like a brother. He is a cousin brother, but he looks even like Krishna. He has bluish form. Krishna's form is blue, bluish. And Uddhava also had. And Krishna considered Uddhava very learned and very expert in everything, especially political affairs, strategy, and very trustworthy. When they were after the after Yudhisthira was released, the Pandavas, he wanted to perform the sacrifice, and it was this particular sacrifice is only to be performed by the emperor, and he is supposed to have defeated everyone else in the world. Everyone is supposed to accept his authority. So it was discussed. Yudhisthira Maharaj told Krishna, I want to perform this sacrifice. And Because I want to glorify you. I want to prove that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead and everyone should worship you. So, at that time, Uddhava was present and Krishna said, well, let's see what Uddhava thinks. And so Uddhava said, it's a very good idea to perform this sacrifice, but first, I have to do something about Jarasandha, because Jarasandha is not going to accept your sovereignty. He will fight, and he's a very, very powerful warrior, and he has a huge army. So I suggest that you go, that Arjuna and Bhima and Krishna go there in disguise as Brahmanas, and they beg a duel with Jarasandha, and that way there will not have to be so many unnecessary warriors being killed. In this way, just one of you will fight with him, and because Krishna will be present there, it will be victorious. So Krishna accepted this. This is a very brilliant strategy, and everyone accepted. So Uddhava was known as being very learned and very trusted. Krishna had left Vrindavan when he was young. You know, at least the external reason was that Kamsa had ordered him to come to Mathura for the Dhanuryagya and wrestling match. Actually, he wanted to kill Krishna. He had heard from prophecy that the eighth son of Devaki would kill him. And he was killing the sons one after the other as they came out. And he was afraid that there would be another son that would kill him. So he had heard from Narada Muni that this son was Krishna. He had already been born. So now he made the arrangement, bring him to Mathura and kill him. So based on that order, Krishna was going to leave Vrindavan. But the gopis had a fear that gopis means the cowherd girls. They were afraid that he would never come back. Otherwise, why would they have been so upset? If it was just for a few days, they might have been able to bear that, because each day Krishna would go out into the pasturing grounds and they had to bear the separation while he was away from the home. But they had the idea that he might not return once he went to Mathura and saw the enlightened girls there, the beautiful ladies of the city, that he might not come back. They were thinking that we're just cowherd girls. We're not very cultured. If he goes there, he's such so fond of women. When he sees beautiful women there in the city, nicely dressed and cultured, then he won't come back to us anymore. Every girl, right? If there's some girl living out in the country and she has a boyfriend, she's afraid if her boyfriend goes to the big city that he may find some other girlfriend and not come back. So they were afraid that he wouldn't come back. And they were right, he didn't come back. So at one point Krishna wanted to send a message to them. So he asked Uddhava, he wrote a message and to them. And he asked Uddhava to go and deliver the message on his behalf. Just imagine how trusted. It's a fact that Lord Chaitanya said that there's no way of worshipping Krishna better than that of the gopis. Ramya kachi upasana vrajvaduva genava kalpita. There's no form of worship better than that conceived by the gopis. Uddhava went there to deliver this message to the gopis. Krishna trusted him so much. No one else could be trusted with such a message. That is the position of Uddhava, pure devotee. And Maitreya, he's also a devotee, but there's some tendency towards Gyan. Gyan means knowledge, theoretical knowledge, especially in relationship with the idea of becoming one. Monistic means to become one with the Lord, or to merge. So there's some inclination towards this merging. It's like we were in Copenhagen the other day, and one man came, and he was saying that the ultimate is Brahman, the undivided one, that we are all Brahman. So, and no matter how much we could say, we were telling him about Krishna, and he said, I'm not attracted to Krishna, I'm only attracted to the merging into the Brahman. That was all. So there are those who are attracted like that. Now Maitreya was not exclusively attracted in that way, but there was some. Sometimes one may be mixed. He may be partly a devotee, but partly he also has some inclination towards becoming one, or this impersonal, towards the Brahma Jyoti. Are there any questions?
Maharaj, in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that in this age, when Lord Krishna appeared, the Treta and Dwapara Yuga, they changed places. So can you elaborate on that?
Normally, Dwapara Yuga is second after such yuga. But in this particular yuga, they switched. Special. Another question?
I wanted to ask, because later on it will be so that Vidura will choose the spiritual master, and he will be, Maitreya will be his Guru Maharaj. And I have had this doubt for some years of him, because he came first to Uddhava, if I remember right, and Uddhava was saying, oh, I cannot do this because there is one devotee who is older than me, please go, he's around. I was always feeling a little bit surprised because...
You're disappointed.
Yeah, because
perhaps.
Like you said, that Prabhupada also described my friend was a little bit like what impersonal thing, and how silly, I hope this is not an offense, but would be the spiritual master, and also what his focus was very nice. How he was described in the beginning was a little doubtful, you know?
Well, of course, this description is before his hearing from Lord Krishna. He's described as a Jnana Misra Bhakta before, not necessarily after. That's one thing. After he had darshan with Lord Krishna, just like somebody may be formerly a karmi, but if he sees Krishna, and he hears from Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, then he gives up being a karmi. He's no longer a karmi. He becomes a pure devotee. So that's one consideration. And the other consideration is that they both heard from the Lord. That was the idea, because Vidura wanted to know what were the Lord's final instructions. Because actually Krishna left instructions for Vidura too. He gave specific instructions for Vidura. And Vidura was so happy about that, that he was remembered by the Lord at the last stage. And both of them were there. So there's etiquette. One should not take a disciple if there is a senior devotee present. Sometimes these days this etiquette is used in reference to our devotees in ISKCON. Someone may say, that I'm senior to the devotees, the disciples in ISKCON, so they should not accept disciples in my presence. They should bring the disciples to me, the candidates. This has some validity, but there's another principle that overrides that. And that principle is the order of the spiritual master. The spiritual master, in this case, Srila Prabhupada, specifically wanted his own disciples to initiate the future candidates in ISKCON. And he made that clear. Therefore, that's a higher principle than the other etiquettes. The order of the spiritual master. There's an example that proves this, which I'll speak. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as you know, was a disciple of Ishwara Puri. And after the demise or departure of Ishwara Puri, one of his other disciples named Govindadas, he came to Lord Chaitanya and he said, Ishwara Puri, my Guru Maharaj has sent me to be your servant. And what did Lord Chaitanya say? He said, no, I cannot. I cannot accept you because you're my godbrother. How can you be my servant? You're my master. Godbrother, we say Prabhu. We refer to godbrothers as Prabhu. Prabhu means master. So he didn't want to accept a godbrother in his menial servants. Just like we don't like our godbrothers to do some service for us, wash our clothes or bring our plate. No, we want to do some service for them. So this is what Lord Chaitanya said. But then he considered that, yes, I shouldn't accept service, but then again, Guru Maharaj has ordered. My Guru Maharaj has given this order that you should be my servant, so that is more powerful. That instruction, therefore he accepted him as his servant on the order of his Guru Maharaj. So in this way, Prabhupada has ordered his disciples to accept disciples in ISKCON. And that's why we do it. You may be wondering, why don't we pass them over to a senior devotee who might be present on the planet, a senior Vaishnava? But we don't, because Prabhupada ordered that we accept the disciples. Any other?
When Mother Yasoda was trying to bind Krishna with a rope, and time and time again it was three inches too short, was it that these three just represented something in a bodhisattva?
Pardon me? Yeah,
was it that these 2 inches, which was too short, did they represent?
So do you have some information on them?
I heard something that they represent some attitude that the devotee, that devotee is lacking, that's why he cannot bind.
Devotee is what? Devotee is what?
He's lacking some qualities. So.
Perhaps, but Prabhupada explains it, that it was to indicate that Krishna cannot be bound. That no matter how fast you run, Isha Upanishad also says, he overcomes all others running. He's far away, but he's very near as well. So you cannot bind him with any ordinary ropes. He's not material. His body is not measurable. You cannot measure it. Well, okay, he's maybe 35 inches around the waist, or 28 inches. I'll get a rope 40 inches, and I'll tie it, and then he'll be tied. No. He cannot be measured like that. He's beyond our grasp. He cannot be captured even by the... Another meaning Prabhupada explains is the jnanis and the yogis, they cannot capture him. Pantas tukoti shatarvat sarapsam pragamyo vayodatavi manaso munipungabhanam sopyasti yat prapadya simya vichinchitatve. Even traveling at the speed of mind or the speed of air, For millions of years, one cannot approach Krishna. How far away he is? He's not approachable by the gyanis and the yogis who drill the respiration. But he's available for pure devotees. That's the point. When her love became so pure, when Krishna was pleased with her attitude of love, and of course it's all up to him when he decides to reveal himself, then he allowed himself to be bound up. That's our Vaishnav understanding. Maybe there's some other indications. Krishna accomplishes many things at the same time, so not only one thing. Okay. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
Krishna Prasad. Namaste. 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 Namaste